Women have been giving birth for centuries, so it's a pretty natural experience, right? Wrong. I'm Stephanie King, professional doula, childbirth educator, and the creator of the My Essential Birth course, the online childbirth education course that's helping women everywhere confidently achieve their best birth. Today's culture would have us think that birth should be treated like an illness or an emergency, and that most of us need other people telling us what's best for our bodies because we aren't the experts. So sit tight, because if you're tuning into this podcast, you'll probably start to believe in your body, your intuition, and find yourself empowered and confident to do what it takes to have the birth of your dreams. If you like listening to me take you through these weekly topics step by step, then you're going to love the My Essential Birth course. Make sure that you're subscribed to the podcast and definitely head over to myessentialbirth.com for the free downloads mentioned right here in these episodes and to join the birth course and community full of pregnant moms just like you. I have to add a disclaimer that I am not a medical professional and I cannot provide medical advice. All of the information expressed in this podcast are based off of personal, professional, and educational experiences and are my own opinions. Please work with a provider you trust for medical advice during your pregnancy and birth. This week's reviewer of the week is Jennifer from Miami. She says, awesome podcast for pregnant women. Thank you for this educative and wonderful podcast. I listened throughout my pregnancy and felt very prepared to make decisions regarding my birth plan. I love how this podcast speaks about birth in a positive light. After having a traumatic epidural experience with my first baby, I vowed never to put myself through that terrible experience again if I had more children in the future. I went on to have my second and third baby 100% unmedicated. I felt very empowered and prepared, especially after listening to this podcast. I knew that my body was made for birth and that I was stronger than I gave myself credit for. What I absolutely loved about my unmedicated birth experience is that I felt more in control and listened to my body by following its commands as to when to move, switch positions, and push. I did not have to wait for a nurse to tell me when to do these things. Although I never took the birth course, I am very grateful I was able to listen and feel mentally prepared to have the unmedicated birth that I always wanted. This, along with positive affirmations, helped me labor and deliver 100% naturally. Thank you for keeping moms informed and allowing us to understand that we have options when it comes to our birth plan. We are capable, strong, and magnificent. Thank you so much for this absolutely wonderful review. I actually chose this because of your ending words, those capable, strong, and magnificent, because I want that to lead into this incredible interview that I am so blessed to be able to do with my sister today. I'm totally with you. I think all about how important it is for a mother to feel empowered and heard and supported and encouraged, and the difference that it makes whether or not she has the birth that is laid out as the perfect birth of her dreams. And it makes a difference for how we walk into motherhood. And I know that I've talked about that a lot, but I feel like it needs some more emphasizing. So this is another extra special episode because, like I said, I'm here with my sister. And if you've been following along for a while, at least since last October-ish, right? You know that I said that I hope to have her on the podcast one day. And I'm really excited for all of you to listen to her story. It's one of strength and courage and resilience. And to be honest, she's one of the most powerful women that I have ever met in my life. And she's an incredible mother. In fact, I tell her all the time how she's instantly a better mother than I ever was. And I get to learn from her every day. So I hope that you guys too will get to enjoy this episode with my sister. And so without further ado, I would like to introduce Amanda. Hello, Amanda. No pressure. So I thought it would be really great for you to be able to kind of walk all of these women, these incredible listeners that we have, through your birth story. But before we get there, I wanted to walk through your pregnancy because there were some pretty significant things that happened that I remember I had told you, and definitely telling other people that it blows my mind that you were able to have kind of the confidence and resilience that you did when it came down to the wire. Like, there are some things that you just took control over that I think even myself, I would have been hesitant to, even with all the information and knowledge that I have. That's just your personality. So I definitely want people to hear about that. But if you're comfortable and you don't mind, I want to hear a little bit about your getting pregnant story, because this wasn't an easy path for you also. And I know that a lot of our listeners, if they haven't had that issue, may have it in the future, but I know a lot of them struggle to get pregnant in the first place. So would you be willing to share a little about that?
Yeah. So I had endometriosis and I had the worst periods ever. But I also, after I got married, we decided to try to get pregnant a few times, pretty immediately. And I couldn't, we, I went, to, I ended up going to like an OBGYN and a gynecologist, a fertility doctor.
The works.
Multiple people told me that like there was not anything specifically wrong with me unless I wanted to like have them do surgical scoping and stuff to see if like there was more internal damage or something. But basically it took over 6 years of trying, and then finally I was like, I'm done trying. Like, clearly this was not meant for me. And then I randomly found out I was pregnant. Actually, I think you remember, but I thought I had the flu for like a month straight, and you're like, that's not the flu. You need to get a pregnancy test. And you would always joke with me like, oh, you're pregnant. And I'm like, shut up. I'm not pregnant. And this time I was like, oh, maybe I am. And I went and got a pregnancy test, and it immediately came back.
No doubt.
Like,
you were absolutely
pregnant.
Yeah,
you are definitely pregnant. So.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, it ended up being like 8 weeks
long. Yeah, I want to bring up too, because you talked about endometriosis, and I want women to hear and understand and to know that endometriosis is something that we find, especially, what's it called, like within the family line, hereditary, right? So like if one has it, it's really likely that another could, and so on and so forth. And we have a youngest sister that it sounds like she very well suffers from those same things. And some of those signs are things like heavy bleeding or bloating or cramping or period poops, right? Or like all of those like really fun things that we don't really think about, pain during intercourse. You can even have like pain, like bowel, like painful bowel movements. And I know for me when I got pregnant, and I'm curious to know if it's the same for you, I don't remember, but did you, when you got pregnant, did some of those symptoms go away?
Oh yeah. Like all of them.
Those hormones,
honestly.
Right?
But then I had pregnancy symptoms, and I had a really terrible pregnancy. So I honestly probably would have traded some of them back for the like lack of nausea.
Oh,
that
you
I
poor
experienced.
Thing. Yeah. You had nausea the whole time.
Yeah. Until 8 months in. And then finally like the 9th month, I was able to not have so much nausea anymore. But
then you had prodromal labor, right?
Then I was in labor.
Which we'll get there. Basically, she didn't get a break, you guys. So that your baby better be an angel is all I'm going to say. Oh,
he is an angel baby. He is.
I wanted to talk about endometriosis a bit because I know that I've shared about it on the podcast, and I think it's something that we don't talk about enough. I think it's getting a little more light recently, especially. But I want to throw some resources at you real quick. And one of those, actually, I want to throw this main resource at you, and that is to get onto, it's a Facebook group called Nancy's Nook, and I will put a link for it in the show notes. But when I started experiencing these things, and I want to point out to women, if you get pregnant and you notice that you have some of these, what you would call like menstrual symptoms go away, obviously you're not menstruating, but they come cyclically. And that a lot of like pain with, even with eating and digestion, I think was like the big one for me. And because I didn't have a gallbladder, right, Amanda? Like she doesn't have a gallbladder either. Like you make so many excuses for this, not realizing that, wait, there's something bigger here. So I want you guys to get on there. There's a lot of education resources on there. There's a list of doctors that are specialists. It is not the same thing to go to your regular OB and do something called ablation as it is to go to a specialist and have them by surgical means like cut out the endometriosis. It's completely different. So this is not an endo episode, but I want to throw that out there and let you know that you're not alone. And if you're noticing some of those things, it's a good idea to pay attention, especially if you're planning on having more children or if you can't get pregnant, because it can absolutely affect that. Okay. So on to kind of like what you did or didn't know about pregnancy before you got pregnant. I'm curious. I want to know a little bit more about that.
I mean, because my sister's a doula, I knew some stuff.
Yes. Good.
But really, like, honestly, I didn't really pay much attention to like when you were talking about pregnancy and birth, because it didn't affect me at all. So
didn't
I would
apply.
Listen to you, and I loved how passionate you were about it. But like it never really stuck in my head. And I think I even told you, like, when I took your birth course, I had to take it like 3 times before like the information stuck with me. I don't know if all women are like that, but like you're like, I've said that it like 6 times in the birth course. What are you talking about? I'm like, I've never heard you say that.
No, I was so glad. Like there were some times like, and I was like, how are you not hearing that? And it was such good feedback for me, because I'm like, I forgot how many times I had to hear that for it to be like solid and to know that I needed to repeat and repeat and repeat for others to hear it. So, no, you were like the perfect person to take the birth course. It was awesome.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I didn't really research much about birth or pregnancy or anything other than like trying to get pregnant before I was pregnant. Yeah. So, and then I think I told you, like, the first thing that I did was like, get that book, What to Expect When You're Expecting. And you're like, put it down. Do not read Burn that. It. What are you doing?
Great. And now I don't know have to why include that's, it like, in the show notes, thing. Amanda.
Oh, sorry.
No, I'm kidding. It's a joke.
Oh, my gosh. But yeah, and then so like, I even got the app and everything. Like, yeah. And it's not a great resource, honestly. But
I'm like, I need to have you back on for like postpartum moms groups, right? Because I keep saying I'm like gonna go on this tangent about how much I do not like them, but and you've had some funny experiences about those too.
No, I was gonna say, like, when they were like, your baby's 2 weeks old, and I'm like, I haven't even had my baby yet.
Oh, that's so, it's so fresh. You're talking about the app, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, like, how is worst. It like having a 2 week old? I'm like, I'm gonna murder somebody.
It's funny because I have an email that goes out, like, it's like, complete this exit survey. Congratulations on your baby. And I'm like, I'm not sending that till 4 weeks after that due date.
Yeah.
Like, we are going to make sure people have had babies, you know? And even that can, like, for some women is like, you're on the edge of, you got to be careful. But mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So tell me a little bit about your pregnancy. I wanted to hear, like, because you were over 30 and no pressure, right? But like getting pregnant a little bit later has its own set of challenges. And so I kind of want to know, like, what were some of your symptoms? How was your body handling it? How are you feeling about being pregnant? Talk to me about that. Because I know there are a lot of moms waiting to get pregnant or early pregnant and they're curious.
My body thought it was a parasite. It tried to inform me by being extremely sick. And I was like, I had a new job at the time and I was trying to go to work every day. And I remember just like waking up and puking and then being like, I have to get into work. Like, this is, I don't care. I have to go to work because I had just started the job like a month before that. Yeah. So that was challenging. And then like right after, because I found out in February and then like right after COVID quarantine hit. And so I was like, oh my gosh, like, I need to like just quarantine myself away from everybody. We didn't know anything about COVID at that point at all. So it was like really scary. I was like 2.5 months pregnant when COVID hit. And then, I mean, they call it COVID-19 because I guess like it was here in November, but we didn't really know about it until like almost March. Yeah. So that was a challenge too, because I had already signed up for like prenatal yoga classes and like all these like fun mom, new mom classes, and everything shut down. And I'm like, oh, wait, hold on. I can't even go get like maternity clothes or like even going to like my OBGYN appointments was so sketchy to me, because it was like, I'm sitting in a medical room and I'm like, who else have you been in contact with? Am I going to get COVID? We didn't know if it like caused miscarriages at that point or like anything. Right. So it was really scary. And then wearing a mask my whole pregnancy was really weird too. Not being able to go out to eat until September, they opened stuff back up finally, thank God. And then you and I went out to eat a couple of times when you came to help me through my labor. But like before that, I remember just being so mad that there was nowhere to eat the whole time I was pregnant.
When you're pregnant, that's real.
Yeah, it was the only thing I cared about. I'm like, this is torture. This life is a prison. But and basic stuff like toilet paper and water, like you couldn't get half the time, and like that was really challenging too. But really, like the symptoms that I dealt with were nausea every single day, 4 to 6 times a day. Sometimes I would wake up in the middle of the night, like 2 o'clock in the morning, and go run to the bathroom, like just puking everything out that I had eaten. And then I also, like, my original OBGYN was saying, like, you're not gaining enough weight because I had so much nausea. So then she wanted to put me on Zofran. And I read up some of the, like, complications that can arise from Zofran during pregnancy, and I didn't feel comfortable taking it. So I just kind of dealt with it. And I, like, tried ginger. I tried saltines. I think you remember mom like tried to recommend stuff to me 100 times and I was
I should go back and look at the text messages. You're like, I swear if she tells me saltines one more time.
No, seriously, because like when you're dealing with that and you're hormonal and like all this other crazy stuff is happening with COVID and stuff, I'm like, I do not like, I'm not going to try this again. I've already tried it. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I was really annoyed with her. But yeah, nothing really worked for my nausea. I'd never found anything that actually worked. The thing that like helped the most was making sure I ate every 2 hours. But even then, like when I would go to sleep, clearly I'm not eating in the middle of the night and I was extremely tired. It took it out of me. I remember that more than anything was like, I was so exhausted. I had never felt that tired in my body. Yeah. For that long, like, so, that's why I thought I was sick, because, like, there's no way, the only time I've ever felt, like, that right. tired was, like, I'm definitely sick right now, but, yeah, that was basically the main things for me was nausea and really exhaustion.
Okay, so you had some really interesting, I guess, is the word I'm gonna use to describe it. Run-ins with some providers, and you switched a couple of times. So I would love if you would share some of that information with the people that are listening.
So I went to a medical provider called Caduceus Medical Center, and they had OBGYNs.
It reminds, I'm sorry. So there's this like one Wipeout that Michael and I watch, and you're like, there's this guy at the beginning, and he, you know, they're joking with him or whatever, and he's like, Father of the Year, Caduce. That's all I can think of as you're saying this.
No, Caduceus is actually like the Greek god of medicine.
Yes, of course. Go ahead.
Okay, Caduceus Medical Center, I was assigned an OBGYN, and they actually, from the very first appointment, it was really nerve-wracking because the first guy or OBGYN I saw was, she couldn't find the heartbeat, and she basically said, like, without saying it, that, like, there might not be a heartbeat. And I'm like, oh my god. Like, yes. I was terrified. And then they sent me in for an ultrasound, and she was just looking for the heartbeat in the wrong spot. And then they were like, no, your baby's totally healthy from what we can see. You know, keep coming to your appointments so that we can keep track of it. But like your 8 weeks, it was like 8 weeks, 2 days or something like that is what they said. And like, then they gave me, you know, my guesstimated due date. And then when I went back to her, or I actually changed providers at that point to another doctor under Caduceus Medical. And at the first appointment, I loved her. She was super nice, super awesome, like answered all my questions. And then the second appointment, like I remember COVID had hit, like the quarantine style of course, the quarantine part of COVID had hit.
Quarantine style.
And so I started experiencing prenatal depression, and I remember I told her that, and she just brushed over it, like, yeah, that happens. And then I had to, like, I would get really excited to hear the heartbeat at every single one of my appointments, so I would have to remind her to take his heartbeat, and I'm like, that feels not legit to me, because, like, shouldn't you be monitoring my baby? The reason that I ended up switching from her is because she would come in the room, talk to me for like a minute and a half, and then have her nurse practitioner come in and get the rest of the info from me. And they never touched on the fact that I had prenatal depression, no matter how many times I brought it up. They never touched on like the anxieties or anything else that I was dealing with. And then finally, the real turning point was when I asked for a dye-free option for the gestational diabetes drink. And they said they didn't offer that. And I was like, okay, well, is there an alternative? Can I drink a certain amount of fruit juice or something that like equals the same amount? They're like, no, that actually doesn't work. I'm like, I don't know. It feels like it would work. But I'll accept your medical opinion here. And then I was like, so like, just give me a dye-free option. And they told the same company makes a dye-free option, and she would not give it to me. And I'm like, okay. So then I switched medical providers. At that point, my insurance had kicked in, so I was able to go to one under my insurance. I wasn't paying out of pocket anymore, which was nice. And then, so I was in a different network and I was able to choose a different provider. And it was at a medical center that, like, I was going to birth at that hospital. They had a natural birth section at the bottom, like it was a birth center. And I was super excited about this because I could even use a midwife or bring in a doula, whatever. And then I could have an unmedicated birth, a water birth, whatever I wanted to do. And if something went wrong, the hospital was right upstairs. So
yeah,
I felt really confident about that. I was really excited. And then I started, you know, talking to her. I told her about my depression. She was like, no, that super needs to be addressed. Like, it's very important for you to be in a good mindset while you're pregnant, especially with all the COVID stuff going on and all this stuff. So she totally addressed that. I really loved that. And then apparently, every time that you went in, I would have to pee in a cup and they would check my proteins and, you know, all the different stuff that they check when you are pregnant. And mm-hmm. apparently she like did a drug test on one of them, which, you know, cool, whatever. I'm not doing drugs while I'm pregnant. And she's like, so it came back that you have alcohol in your system. And I was like, what? I hadn't even drank alcohol since like 2 months before I found out I was pregnant. Like, I don't really drink that much. And it was, for New Year's was the last time that I had a drink before I found out I was pregnant. So I'm like, no, you should retest. And she's like, okay, we'll retest. And I came back the next week and she was like, no, but it tested positive for alcohol again. And then what really bothered me is she was very accusatory, but not willing to offer help. Like, if I was an alcoholic and I could not stop myself from drinking while I was pregnant, there should be like resources and support for that. Not right. just like, she basically just made it out like, we're going to test the baby as soon as he comes out. We're like making it and then telling me that like CPS would talk to me if it comes. And I'm like, if I am 17 weeks pregnant and I can't stop drinking, like, you should help that somebody in that situation.
Right.
So I was really annoyed at that because, like, I was clear enough in my mindset not drinking and being sober right. to know that that was wrong. And so I ended up filing a report against her. And then it wasn't until I filed a grievance that they went back and tested my urine and found out it was actually I had gestational diabetes. And that the sugar levels in my urine had fermented to the point that they were testing positive for wow. alcohol. So when the so when the senior lab tech went back over my results, he was able to show that it was definitely sugar levels and it had nothing to do with alcohol. But that, like, if you put a test strip into it, it will turn back alcohol because that's how alcohol reacts in your body. But no matter how many times I told her, I think I went there 4 or 5 times and every single time she was like, no, I know you're lying. Addicts lie. And I'm like, this is messed up. Like, you have a mom that's telling you that's not what's happening. And then once I filed a grievance, she called me back and basically said, like, well, if you would have gotten your gestational diabetes test done on time, this wouldn't be an issue, and put it back on me. And I'm like, right. no, that's not the issue here. The issue is the lack of support for moms that need the help.
Well, because you were already dealing with anxiety and depression. I remember that's what, mm-hmm. when you were telling me these things, was so upsetting. And didn't you have somebody that you had reached out to and they were like, that's so wrong, I'm going to get in touch with the hospital and make sure that they have outreach and support for, like, this is yeah. absolutely unacceptable.
Yeah. And I even, like, one of my, my sister-in-law's, dad was a medical professional and he was very upset about it too. And he even said, like,
I kind of want to sing your praises for a moment though, because if women like you didn't do the right thing in those situations, it never, like, it would have gone overlooked. No one would have talked uh-huh. to her. No resources would have been in place. So I just, yeah. I appreciate that you were willing to speak up. This is where I'm like, I would shrink into my little self, you know, and you're like, no, that's not okay. Let me go take care of this, you know?
Yeah. Well, I really just didn't like being accused of something that I wasn't doing and then having her, like, tell me, no, addicts lie. Like, okay, right. So right there, you just wrote off everything that I am saying because I'm an addict now in your head. And like, clearly I have depression and anxiety. So that's why you tested my urine in the first place, probably.
Right. Right.
And, but like, really that's like a medical condition now. It's my hormones that are really affecting me, especially during this quarantine, everything. And like, they really could have helped me instead of being like, just accusing me and then threatening me with CPS and all of this stuff.
Right.
And
so extreme,
especially like that early on, you need to offer support and help to a woman if they're really drinking, because like it can mess up your pregnancy pretty bad, you know, and you, that's a little baby inside of you. So that I feel really upset still when I think about.
Yeah, rightfully so.
How many women have gone through that and they were drinking and they needed that support, and instead they're met with like threats, and
right.
It's just really sad to me. Yeah. And the only reason that I was able to speak up is because I knew that there's absolutely no way that there's alcohol in my body. I think I remember telling you, I was like, maybe I'm using too much hand sanitizer.
Yeah, you were sincerely worried about it. I remember.
Yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh, if I'm testing positive for alcohol, is it affecting my baby? And then I'm so glad that I filed a grievance because they were able to retest my urine. But even with me telling her 5 times, like, no, I'm not drinking, she never went and called the lab and said, like, retest this urine for other things, you know, things that could cause an alcohol. Because, like, that's really important. If there's that much sugar in my body, like, at that point, I was able to start, you know, on a gestational diabetes diet. It wasn't bad enough. It wasn't even bad enough that I needed to be medicated and I was testing positive. So, like, but if it's that bad that it's in your urine and it's like fermenting, then clearly that's affecting your baby too. You know, like my sugar levels were a problem, and they should have thought about that, like as a medical professional, I feel. But I was an addict in their eyes. So I was a lying person.
Okay. But you did have some positive experiences after this. And so what did you do? You didn't go to her forever. You filed your grievance and you went your separate ways. But what did you do after that? And what worked well?
Well, actually, one of the reasons I was already going to stop seeing her is because when I asked her about her cesarean birth rate, it was like over 40%. Wow. And I was like, wait, what? And she's like, well, yeah, like, you know, you can have a birth plan, but things don't usually go to plan. And I'm like, I don't know. This feels that's wrong positive to me. And then, yeah. And then, so then after all of that, I decided to look for a midwife because I was kind of over OBGYNs at that point. I like that's some traumatizing experiences.
Right.
I was able to find a midwife that would take me. I went to one and they basically wouldn't take people with gestational diabetes. And then I went to another.
When you didn't have like enough gestational diabetes for it to be like you didn't need medication. It wasn't anything like that. Right. Which is frustrating because there are a lot of midwives that are like, no, it's fine. But that's frustrating that that's what you found.
Yeah. No, it was the birth center that I went to. It's a great birth center, but they wanted to keep their numbers low. And I guess you have a higher chance of needing like interventions if you have gestational diabetes. So it was just a rule for their birth center.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's what they found. I don't know the numbers on it. I'm not going to lie. But I found a midwife that lived about 20 minutes from me, and she was awesome. She came and did the rest of my prenatal work. I think I switched providers at 32 weeks. She was like, that's kind of late to be switching. Like, are you sure? And I'm like, yes, I'm very sure. I need a new provider. We ended up making a plan for a water birth at home. She had like this birth kit with a tub and all this stuff. And then Stephanie, actually, so I went into prodromal labor at 33 and a half weeks, and she came out and like gave me some herbs and told me I was on bed rest until 36 weeks. So I was on bed rest for like 2.5 weeks. And she's like, because she couldn't legally birth at home. Like, I couldn't birth at home with her until 36 weeks.
Yeah.
So after 36 weeks, I was able to get out of bed. So for that 2.5 weeks that I was in bed, I didn't have any labor at all. It was cool. but also like hard because you can't like get out of bed. Like the only time I was able to get out of bed was to go to the bathroom. She was really strict about that. And then like the day that 34 or 36 weeks hit, I was like, oh, I'm getting out of bed. Like, I don't care if I go into labor today. I'm done being in bed. And she was like, yeah, it's fine. Now your body's like rested enough that you're totally fine. At this point, I was already like 4 centimeters dilated and like 40% effaced, I think. And then, it was fine. Like there was another week or so, maybe 2 weeks, before I went into prodromal labor again. And then it happened so fast. Like my contractions started like right on top of each other. I started feeling like shaky and like I was getting like sweats and stuff during my contractions. And I remember I called Stephanie and I was like, Stephanie, like, I think I'm about to have a baby. Like, this is all happening so fast. And she's like, well, explain your symptoms. And I start explaining them. And she's like, I'm getting in the car. I'm coming out there right now. I don't want to miss
having you. I've been a doula long enough. I know what's happening. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, like, apparently some of the symptoms I was having, she was worried that it was, like, a symptom of transition even. And I don't remember what it was exactly, but you're like, are you okay? So I'm packing up my kids. We're coming out right now.
Well, and the main thing was because when you were having like those strong contractions and whatever, I was listening to the noises over the phone, how close they were coming together, everything. It was if she couldn't come till 36, you were like 35 plus 5 or 35 plus 6. In other words, she wasn't going to be able to attend. And I'm like, I'm not leaving my sister at her house by herself. So I did. I packed up the kids and we're in Utah. You're in California. So I just drove overnight and got there at like 5:30 in the morning. But luckily, your stuff had slowed down by then and I was able to go to sleep. And then you had prodromal labor until the end of time. But but that was the panic is too. Like I would have stayed, but I'm like, I can't let you be there alone. So.
Yeah. I know. I felt so bad though. Like, honestly, like I felt so guilty that I wasn't having my baby because you were there for so long. And like, I was
We had to spend so much time together.
I know. I know. But like, I felt so bad for your kids and stuff. It was so nice. Better.
Grandma and grandpa were treating him real good.
Yeah. I'm really glad that you were able to come out though, because you were my biggest support through all of that for sure. And, I was in labor for 28 days when my water broke, and then another almost 24 hours. I think it was 24 hours, actually. I think it was like 23 hours until, they said it. Okay. So then I was given Pitocin to try to speed up contractions because now that my water's broke, there's, a ticking time clock on the situation. So we tried laboring at home. We even filled up the birth tub. At one point I thought that it was like happening. And then I started having pitting edema and my midwife took my blood pressure. Everything was normal. And she's like, I just don't understand why you're having this edema. It's like really weird for me. So she sent me to the hospital, which as soon as that happened, I was not happy. I started like panicking because I don't do well in medical situations, which is why I wanted to have a home birth anyway. Plus with COVID going on, that made it worse. But then once I got there, the nurses were really nice. I just remember when the doctor came in and he was like, just, we got to get you into surgery. And I'm like, you didn't even look at me.
First thing out of his mouth. I was so mad. I'm like, even if you know in the back of your head, that's what's happening. That's not how you approach this woman that has been laboring. You didn't even ask her story or how she's feeling or like anything.
I remember them saying like, if this Pitocin doesn't work, we have to get you into surgery. So like, we want to start you on an epidural. And until that point, I had labored for a month without an epidural or any medicine. So I was like pretty set on, I'm just going to do this. I know I can at this point.
Yeah.
And And I mean, honestly, with endometriosis, like the contractions were not any worse than the cramps that I had during my periods. Yeah. So, yeah. I felt pretty in control with that. And I was really sad when they were like, we should give you an epidural just in case we have to get you into surgery. Because I'm like, as soon as I get an epidural, I know I can't get out of bed anymore. I know that I'm like limited in things. And then there's more interventions that can happen at that point. The main one being a C-section, which I really did not want. I don't think most moms that don't have a planned C-section want a C-section.
Right.
So they started the Pitocin, Logan's heart rate dropped, and that's when he came in and was like, we have to get you in surgery. It has to happen right now. And they added more medicine to my epidural, and I don't even think it was like 15 minutes before they're wheeling me out.
Yeah.
And then
it's pretty quick.
You weren't there for this because they wouldn't let you in the surgery room. But when they cut me open, I mean, obviously I didn't see it. They asked if I didn't want the curtain. I'm like, please put the curtain up. I do not need to see what's happening. but like he was a big baby. And when they Still took is. Him out, I just remember this like suction noise, like they like plopped him out, and then he didn't cry. And I was like, and I remember looking at the doctors like, oh my gosh, is he okay? Like, is everything cool?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And then they brought him over to the little like warming station that they have there to clean him up. And it wasn't like, it was like another 30 or 45 seconds, which felt like 7 minutes for me, that until he started crying. And I'm like, oh my gosh, okay, he's alive. Yeah. Like, because you don't see anything. It's so sketchy. Like, it is full of anxiety. And you saw, I had a panic attack when the doctor came in.
Well, you'd been up for many hours. I mean, even when you slept, you didn't, I mean, the prodromal labor, right? Your baby was born at 42 weeks. Like, you had been doing this for a while. You had done all the things. And then you didn't share about this, but you had this experience where your midwife had sent you to the hospital, right? And remind me what the purpose for that was. But then you had an experience with the hospital attendees there. Talk about that just for a moment.
So she sent me in for a non-stress test. And
that's what it
because,
was.
She couldn't find his heart rate one time. And so that was like at 38 or 39 weeks. And she was really great at finding his heart rate before that point. So, like her saying like, I don't know, I can't find his heart rate, ended up being that he had flipped around and like his feet were basically where his heart should have been at that point. Mm-hmm. And so they were able to find it pretty quickly on an ultrasound. Yeah, so I remember telling the nurses, like, no, I've been in labor for, like, 2 weeks already. And they're like, you know that we can just induce you here and you can have your baby at night. And I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm going to wait. I'd rather try to have it naturally. I feel like your body knows when it's supposed to come. And, like, when he came out, he was so healthy, even though my water had broke, even though he actually had meconium. They found meconium in the water. He had pooped inside of me. He never needed like NICU time. He didn't have an infection. Mm-hmm. I actually declined all of the antibiotics and everything because that can cause thrush for them. So, and I was planning on breastfeeding
too. I remember
multiple times. Yeah. Like they even took a blood test instead of giving him just like giving us antibiotics because I was like, no, I'd rather know that there is an infection before you start treating it.
Right.
Like, I don't understand why they just push so much stuff on you. And then they make you sound like you're the crazy one for asking for more information about it.
It's so true.
So, so this is fun. This is being a mom.
But that night.
Yeah. Was there something else?
Yeah. Like the blood pressure. Do you remember? So they like take your blood pressure.
Oh, my gosh.
Did you forget about this?
I totally forgot about that.
Well,
yeah, no,
because that was insane.
So they took my blood pressure and it was a little bit high because every time that I go into when I would go into my OBGYN, it would be high. And then they'd take it about 15 minutes after I'd been there and it would drop back down. It's actually called white coat syndrome.
Yeah,
it's basically like when you're in a medical environment, you are on edge. So your blood pressure is likely to rise. for some people, it's not across the board, but they took my blood pressure and said that I had hypertension and what is it called when you're pregnant? Preeclampsia. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, no, I don't have preeclampsia. I've been checked every single week. Like, I do not have this. I'm right. sure of it. And they're like, well, let's take it again. And so she took it like 6 minutes later. And sure enough, it was even higher than before. And then I'm like, okay, well, let me just tell you, I get anxious in these situations. That's probably what's happening. And she's like, okay, well, let's take it again. Literally like within 2 minutes. And it was even higher than before. And so I called my midwife. My midwife's like, that's not how they're trained. We all know that if you take your blood pressure and then take it immediately again, it's going to be higher because the way that the blood pressure cuff like constricts your blood and stuff like that, it actually like creates a higher blood pressure for a minute. So like they have to wait 30 minutes in between. And I'm like, no, they're taking it like one after another and it keeps getting higher readings. And she's like, of course it does. Like they're literally making it have higher readings. And so I sat there, they made me sit there for because I was like, can you like take it after a half hour? They're like, fine, whatever. And like gave me a bunch of attitude about it and then made me wait an hour. And I really just think it was because they were like annoyed at me at that
not
point.
Not happy with you.
Yeah. And so when they came back in, she like my midwife had told me like put on the TV, distract yourself. Don't think about the fact that you're in a hospital for your baby right now, you know, just distract yourself. And then so when they finally came back in, they took it and it was normal. And so they allowed me to go home because they weren't going to.
They tried to keep you. You had to sign mm-hmm. an AMA.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That's why it stands out. I put that on my fridge. Like, yeah. An AMA is you have to sign against medical advice. So they told her you can't leave. It's our determination that you're putting yourself and your baby at risk. So if you want to leave, you have to sign something that says this is against medical advice. I agree to leave this hospital. And she did. Mm-hmm. And I would have been sitting there like, I can't do this. And you came home. You're like, whatever. I've done that before. I'm like, oh, my gosh. You're so brave.
When they wanted to remove my gallbladder, I wanted to try to like do homeopathic remedies at home. So I signed an AMA to go home. And then I ended up back there two weeks later. It's not always the best move. Yeah. But
you weren't doing that on your own. You had a midwife, a professional midwife at home that was like, this is what's happening. You're fine. Uh-huh. I just checked you. This was to check on baby to make sure uh-huh. we had a heart rate. So anyways, it was.
And they had actually said crazy. Like, oh, we're discharging you. It's totally fine. And then 5 minutes later, the actual doctor came in and said, nope, we're not discharging you. We're keeping you. We want you to have your baby right now. And I was like, no, I'm not doing that. And I was in labor for 3 weeks after that.
Right. Like, yeah. So that's the amazing part. You would have, and that baby came out fine, like you said. Not only mm-hmm. fine, like very, very well ready to be born when they were born. So mm-hmm. yes. It was incredible. I do want you to, since we're kind of getting towards the end of time here, I want you to take a moment and talk a little bit about, because it is kind of probably a heavier story for you to have to tell, for women to have to listen to. But I love that you have some positives that came out of it in the end. And one of which being when it was time to have a cesarean birth. And I was absolutely there with you through every, like watching you have the decisions, you were making them every step of the way. You did mention to me that it made a difference because you knew that was the correct thing when it was all said and done. So will you just take a couple of minutes to talk about that?
One of the things when I was in labor for so long, our midwife or my midwife, I say ours because you were there with me the whole time.
Yes.
But my midwife had us doing mile circuits, rebozo work, curb walking, taking walks multiple times a day, just doing everything I could to jiggle that baby out. And we thought it was positional. At that point, like, I was like, you know, what are you doing in there, dude? Just get right. Like, clearly, I'm trying to shimmy you out and it's not working.
Yes.
So he was kind of stubborn. He still kind of is. Once we got into the hospital, like clearly I had way more anxiety than at home. I honestly don't think that it like fully registered that I was having a baby to myself until I got to the hospital.
You had been having a baby for a long time. Yeah.
No, I remember you sitting there with me on the couch and you'd wait for my contractions to get closer together. And you're like, oh, is it happening? Ooh. And I'm like, it's not. Don't worry. This is just my life now.
I have hung out with ladies through prodromal labor. Nothing like this. Nothing. It was, I mean, I was the one helping set up the birth tub with the midwife.
Yeah.
We're like, it's happening. She's going through transition. I was like, yeah, I hope you're here now because I'm watching this happen. I've seen it happen a million times before. This is transition. And it wasn't.
It was fine. So, but like, yeah. So once we were in the hospital, I mean, we did everything from the yoga ball or birth ball to squats and changing my position. Like I was in bed, I was out of bed, I was walking around the room, I was doing like everything. They wouldn't let me walk the halls because of COVID,
right?
But I was doing everything else, and that really helped me, like being able to like know exactly like what are my options now, what can I be doing differently, and then like changing it up multiple times to try to like get him moving. Once it was an emergency and they explained that to me, like at the time I was like, no. Right. I don't need this. I'm going to do this naturally. I've already set my mind to this. But after the fact, like I felt a lot better about it than I think I would have if I hadn't taken the birth course, if I didn't have somebody there telling me like, no, we've exhausted all the options. We've done everything we can now. And then, you know, some women just really do need that intervention. Right. So I'm also extremely grateful that we have such wonderful medical advances now that, like, they were able to birth my baby completely fine. He was 100% healthy, never needed any time in the NICU, never needed anything, didn't need extra medicine or anything, even with my gestational diabetes. And I really think that that's because of all the great medical advances we have now. And it, honestly, I was in surgery for like 35 minutes. Like it wasn't very long. So I'm really grateful to be able to know that I was able to do all of these things, the Rebozo work, the forward leaning inversions, the squatting for 30 plus minutes at a time till my legs fell asleep.
Incredible with your squat. So good.
And I have hardware in my leg and I was still able to do that. So, I mean, anything you
did all the things,
mom,
you were incredible. Yeah. Seriously. Yeah.
And sometimes you still need that intervention. So it's great, honestly.
And and when it's time, anyways, that's what I wanted you to share. Cause it's true. When you're like with a mom and you see them exhaust all the options and you're like, okay, this is the next right thing. Mm-hmm. Then we hope that at least you can look back on that birth and say, I don't regret a thing. You know, maybe you were like, dang, I should have done that cesarean a week ago. You know, I'm going to come to this anyway. I'm joking. No. But, you know, like, being able to look back, it makes a difference that it's positive. So we are kind of out of time.
I
thought I'd give you good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. And that's what I meant. Like looking back, those were the words I was using to describe your situation. It was like powerful and strength and resilience and confidence and, I mean, it was incredible to watch you for sure. But I wanted to give you a chance to really quick just to, if you could say something to moms that are pregnant now or looking to become pregnant, like what would be your advice to them? Just like 1 or 2 minutes.
To do the positive affirmation. It really helped me to get rid of my anxieties. Being a first-time mom is scary. You don't know what to expect. And positive affirmations really helped. Also, I think I was way too afraid of the pain levels. It's not as painful as you think it's going to be. It's honestly, your body is made to do it. And it's not going to do something so painful that you're going to end up passing out from it, you know? So it's really like, I think that the fear aspect of the pain really stunted me from being able to like calm my body more. And I think that a lot of first-time moms don't understand that it's not as incredibly painful as you see it in movies and on TV all the time, you know? And I'm sure that the pushing of the baby out is more painful. I'm not going to lie. I didn't get to do that part. But, like, the actual contractions and stuff, like, they're real. Like, I went through it for a month. It wasn't that bad. Until your water broke. Once your water breaks, it definitely increases the intensity. But that's what it is. It's intensity. It's not pain. It's like pressure and intensity. So, but that's what I would say is like, you know, do the work you need to be prepared, and positive affirmations, even though they make you feel dumb sometimes, totally help. It helps your subconscious work through whatever. And, you know, you are a really powerful birthing machine. So
thank you so much, Amanda. I love you so much. I'm so grateful that we got to do this. I kind of love for myself that I have this recording to keep for a lifetime, but also that you're able to share everything that you did so that you're able to be a part of this community, and hopefully women find strength and support in everything that you shared. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me on. I love you.
I love you too.
That's it for this week, but make sure you subscribe to the podcast so that you get notifications first as I drop new episode every week. And don't forget to head over to myessentialbirth.com for all of the free downloads mentioned here, and to join the birth course and community serving pregnant moms just like you. If you enjoyed this and other episodes, I would love it if you would take a few minutes to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. I read every single one and include one at the beginning of each episode. See you next week.